G'day. That's right. It's that time again. Time for cinema. Yes, hello, Cinema Yugen. This is an awesome episode ahead for an awesome film and support the film. They're doing really well. It's a film that we really want to happen. It's called Making Megaforce. And on the funding page, it says, the documentary nobody asked for about the movie no one remembers. Well, that's horsepucky because I remember it. Not only do I remember it, I remember it fondly. I remember how wonderful it was. It was the quintessence of boys playing with their action figures in the sandbox. It stars Barry Botswick, who is our guest. I cannot believe I'm seeing that. Barry Botswick of the Rocky Horror Picture Show. And the filmmaker, the man, the music maker, the dreamer of the dream, Bob Lindenmeyer, today. And you can get over right now. We're going to put a link in the description to the Indiegogo page where you can get over and donate. Donate and get over to support Making Megaforce. That's right. Making Megaforce, starring Barry Botswick, is the action-packed with futuristic vehicles, spandex, jumpsuits, insane stunts, corny dialogue. It's the adolescent adventure of all time, of all time. This is a boy's own stuff, boy's own movie. But one man remembers, and no one knows more about Megaforce than Bob Lindenmeyer. And you can get over right now. He's on a quest to give you everything you would love to know. For those who'd love to know, for those who love Megaforce, and we are happy now on Cinema Yugen to welcome not only the legend Barry Botswick, but the man behind the legend who's going to bring us all the juicy good stuff of the making and the majesty of Megaforce, Bob Lindenmeyer. Gentlemen, welcome to the Yugen.
Thank you for talking about Making Megaforce, although by the sounds of Barry, I didn't think, Barry, I bet you didn't think when you reached this age you'd be spending several years talking ad nauseum about Megaforce.
Well, ad nauseum? Yeah. Well, I love talking about Megaforce because there's only five people who will listen.
Yeah. Which is basically just me, which is why we're such close friends. So.
It's really beautiful. I saw you both on Lisa Downs's web show, Talking Up a Storm. And I liked one of her questions she put to you both, you know, how do you sum up Making Megaforce? And I thought it was interesting, Barry, you went into the topic that it stopped being about a guy who was obsessed with a film and your character and started being about this beautiful friendship, which, you know, jumping in on this conversation seems to be in high gear. I mean, you're talking about, oh, geez, I like your room. Geez, I hope you get your room sorted out there and all that sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, I've always been very concerned about Bob's hygiene and health and his environment. And so whenever I can speak up and help him out and move him forward, that's my goal in life. Which is really sort of why I think Bob ever came to me in the first place. He needed somebody to maybe focus him and keep him going in the right direction, because that's what Ace Hunter does. I mean, he keeps the whole force going in the right direction. And I think that's what Bob was looking for, was that innate, brilliant talent that I have to do that. Oh, God.
So words of wisdom, like you just texted me on Friday, saying, as you know, your film will never see the light of a movie screen.
Right. I said, but that's very funny.
Yeah. Is that the words of wisdom you used in that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or the one that I sent you today after you showed me 7 minutes of it. And I said,
more days.
Too much. Too much. What's your name, bro? Too much Lindenmeyer, not enough Dave. Dave, if you don't know, is the one of the producers who came in late.
Right.
He basically is jumping on the skirts of a very popular franchise.
Barry, I was doing some reading, and this was originally meant to be a TV show, wasn't it? Megaforce was the original concept, wasn't it? So do you think if the movie had been popular, it would have been keen to keep Ace Hunter going on a TV show, you know, like Magnum PI or something like that?
No, I think it was. Well, Tom Selleck should have done it,
right?
You know, yeah, on television, and then I could have gone on to bigger and better things. Or
they actually asked Tom Selleck to do it.
They did, yeah.
They asked Tom Selleck and Michael Douglas, with Barry left.
Douglas, that's an interesting one.
He would have been so good as Ace Hunter.
No, the man at the bottom of the screen shaking his head. He's not on board with that. It's funny how the Pirates of Penzance around this time sort of affected so many different films, because it had such a great revival, and then of course you have Kevin Kline come in the film that propels his career, and then based on the strength of that you had the pirate movie. Have you seen that one, Bob or Barry? The pirate movie made here in Australia with Scott Adkins.
No, I have not. Show Australian movies in America.
Okay.
What was the movie with Scott Adkins?
It's simply called The Pirate Movie. It was like a comedy musical.
I actually have seen that.
With pirates.
Oh.
And then, of course, with the, you know, based on that and the success of the revival of Penzance, the play opens in Los Angeles, and the young Barry Botswick is cast in the Kevin Kline role, and the rest is history.
If you lived in Los Angeles at the time, yeah. It was, I stole everything that Kevin did that was brilliant on stage,
right,
and tried to add a few of my own things, and then we did it in Toronto for a month or so after that, after the Los Angeles gig. And yeah, it was a great summer, and I actually had a good parking place at the theater, which was very unique, you know, that an actor actually could park next to the theater. You know, and well, actually, I parked right by the trash. But that was okay, because I then didn't have to walk on the hot streets of LA.
Right.
You know what's interesting is there's no surviving recording of the actual onstage performance.
To share
for that, there is for the previous one with that other guy. I think we've said his name enough.
Kevin, a lot more high powered advertisers to plug him. We'll save that for
the podcast. There's a great thing on the Merv Griffin show that Barry did with Joanne Wordley.
Is that right? Yeah. Joanna, I don't know.
Yeah, Worsley or something like that.
Yeah. He's a big star.
Barry, in his role as the Pirate King on YouTube, just on that Merv Griffin show, and it's pretty amazing. I mean, he looks exactly like Ace Hunter.
Well, how long was it between my finished the Pirates of Penzance and then I actually went out to the desert and did Ace Hunter? It was pretty close, right?
Yeah. I think it was within 6 months, honestly. Shooting in November of 81, maybe 80. I'd have to look. But it was right after that. And Kent, I actually own the original TV pilot script.
Really?
Any good? Put your arms down, please. All I can see is a sweat underneath your armpits.
Get my sweat.
He's been renovating all day. Look at the ceiling.
That's right. I'm very fidgety. You know this.
He's a very classy guy.
Big time show business, for Christ's sake. No, okay. Now, what were you saying? You were saying something about the script. I never read the script for the TV show, right? You never sent it to me again.
No, the lead character's name was Dixon. And actually, you must have read something because in your notes of your character development for Ace Hunter previous to shooting, you were asking, you wrote questions like, why is it Ace Hunter now instead of Dixon Simpson or whatever?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You know, you said something in this little film clip that you sent me. Was it one of the producers who said that I was being confused by totally different directions from the producers and from Hal Needham? Who was that guy talking in that?
Andre Morgan, who is the co-producer with Al Reddy. Andre Morgan is kind of the background guy to Al Reddy's. Obviously, Al Reddy is kind of the front man and the personality. But Andre Morgan worked for Golden Harvest, and he did all the backroom deals.
Oh, is he still alive?
Yeah, no, he's a huge fan of us, actually, which is really amazing. I send him all the trailers and stuff. Yeah, he's a huge fan, and he loves Megaforce. He was kind of made famous. He discovered Bruce Lee and brought him to the United States for his career. So that's kind of his claim to fame. It's probably on par up there with Godfather. You know, like those two were just a power duo. And of course, of Hal Needham as well, right? Like that trifecta, they made a lot of money on the movie right up until Megaforce.
Really? So this was the first movie that didn't make money for Golden Harvest, do you think?
Yeah, yeah.
And that is because Andre was saying in this film clip you sent me that they weren't on the same page about the tone of the movie, particularly the tone of my character. And I don't remember being as confused as what he says I was in terms of whether I should be over the top or be more of a hero, you know, more of a silent hero. I think it was the sort of clashing of the producer and the director that had more to do with this movie not being what it should have been because of that. Is that true?
No, that's accurate for sure. Like there were days where, because I interviewed both editors on the film, where basically they would cut Hal Needham's cut, and then Hal Needham would go home for the night, and Al Reddy would come in and say, hey, why don't you add this or move this around? And then Hal would come back in the morning and say, wait a minute. Like, where's what we did yesterday? And he's like, oh, well, Al Reddy. So it was back and forth like that to where both editors basically had two complete versions of the film. They had the Hal Needham cut, which they showed Hal, and then they had the Al Reddy cut.
Really?
Wow.
But what ended up in movie theaters then? A combination?
Well, you can kind of tell, right? Like it's a little bit of a mashup between the two. I think that's why it kind of weaves in and out of, you know, a legitimate action movie and a comic book, you know, style, right? Like it's a little, I mean, I personally don't think it's tone deaf. I think it has a style all to itself that was really cohesive and good. But I think general audiences at the time were going to be bewildered by some of the choices.
Yeah. We're just talking here. And we Bob and I don't have a chance always to catch up on the minutiae of, but go ahead, ask a question because
okay, Barry. I mean, this is the best podcast I've ever had to do. You just let the guests on and they talk.
But you were going to say something that I probably had no answer to. What were you asking me?
No. I was going to throw out a question to both of you actually, and it's partly from my wife who's a huge fan. She's in the other room. She's a bit nervous, but the jump.
I want her to walk behind you slowly. I want to see her head just sort of slowly walk behind you.
I'll try and convince her to come through and say.
What's her name?
Jennifer.
Jennifer, get your ass in here. Jennifer, I'm not going to say anything until Jennifer shows up.
Okay.
Oh boy, that's a good strategy. Yeah.
While we're waiting, she did have a question with regard to the jumpsuits. And Bob, you can answer this too because I know you've been in one of those jumpsuits out in the desert. Barry, Bob, how hot was it to stand in those jumpsuits in the middle of the Nevada desert?
Well, Bob, yours wasn't as see-through as mine. Apparently, mine.
No. It wasn't as, you know, it wasn't as spandexy as you had to endure for sure. So.
Spandexy, I'm sure.
Say hello to Barry.
Hi.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Oh, thank you for saying hello and for coming on camera for a second.
Yeah. It was the teller to get her ass in here.
Jennifer, nice to meet you. Thank you so much for showing.
It was nice to meet you too. I really do want to know about the jumpsuits, though.
Oh, the jumpsuit. All right.
Because it doesn't seem like you're wearing underpants in the jumpsuits.
Oh, here we go. We haven't covered this.
do we talk about this in the what is it? Documentary?
Yeah, documentary.
You
said you were cold. Most of the time.
Well, if I was cold, but it certainly didn't appear that I was cold.
No, of course not.
Not at all.
According to Jennifer, I was. It was like I was in the Bahamas.
It was. I mean, I could tell you were hanging to the left.
Oh, was I? I was wearing myself to the left. You know, this has turned into an X-rated thing. My first role on Broadway in a show called Cockadoodle Dandy, I played the cock. And for the rest of my career and life, that's what people know me for. And it's just disgusting. And
it really is. I should be ashamed of myself.
Yes. Well, I mean, you know, no, but I appreciate your acknowledgement of what is
obviously ring, so to speak.
Yeah. I know I must have been wearing something. I just did. Was anybody else in those stupid suits? I mean, with any of the other, they were all in them, right?
Oh yeah, for sure. The editor Patrick Rourke actually, I guess in the documentary, the only comment.
Would you put your arms down for God?
Right.
Jeez, how many times do I have to tell you?
I know, it's just audio.
Okay, go on. It's not audio. I'm looking at you.
Oh, I know. But Patrick Rourke said he had to cut around a lot of guys' crotches because they were too much for the screen. So he would have to zoom in or drop down or cut a scene just before it was a little too burlesque for.
Really? That's interesting. I've never heard that before. But he just certainly didn't do it for me, for damn it. You know?
Oh, you're the hero, so.
Oh, the hero, yeah. I was the cock of the walk, sort of.
You know, when they did Superman, they gave him a cuff to wear underneath his red underwear, but they would keep changing throughout the movie the size of the cuff. So it would go big, small. So nobody could quite get a read on, like, his package was a big issue on how they were going to film that, right? Like,
that
we're talking about, yeah, the hero's junk.
I didn't know that.
This is degenerated from Megaforce into Codpiece.
It really has. Okay, get us back on track, Kent.
Support Megaforce, making Megaforce the documentary. You can get over to the Indiegogo right now. go-go, to the Indiegogo. And you can, what is it, words, not deeds. You can get a whole lot of...
Donate, not words. Have you heard that one yet, Murray?
No, donate, not words. Yeah. No, donate cash.
This is what I'm saying. Like, donate, not words.
Yeah.
That's our Indiegogo tag.
Oh, that's really good. You know what? I have got to do some kind of a thing this weekend in Kentucky. I don't know, for Rocky Horror. And we're talking about how I should tell the audience, you know, to give money to us, you know, without me looking like a cheapskate and a loser, which is going to be very difficult because I'm in Kentucky, for Christ's sake. But... So I was thinking of how do you ask people to give money to something? You're not looking for a lot of money. I mean, and you're probably saying to yourselves, as the audience is probably saying to themselves, why isn't Bostwick just kicking in the final $12,000? And that's just simply because I don't care.
No, the easiest, most beautiful way to do it is say, you know, it's like, how do you sell someone a pen? You know, sell me this pen trick. And what you do is you don't appeal to the fact they want a pen. You appeal to their better nature. You say to them, you people have a chance now. Don't see this as giving away money to help a documentary or to help Barry or to help Bob. This film is about preserving history, preserving a piece of unprecedented human triumph on an epic scale, which has lasted decades, and now you can be a part, an integral part of preserving its memory and its legacy.
So please.
Bob, do you record that so that you can put it?
We can use that. We should.
Yeah, can you do that? You can get a copy of that, right? You know.
On behalf of
Making a Megaforce, This is a plea to not just fans, but people who appreciate fine quality, outstanding, exponential cinema.
Now, wait a minute. Now you've gone too far. Bob, you can't use that part. You can't use it because I will undercut that until the day I die. But I think the first thing he said might make us a dollar and a quarter.
Sure. It's the quintessence of boys at play with their action figures in a sandbox, is how I've always seen Megaforce.
And that's kind of the, you know, obviously the backbone of my movie is being, you know, 54 years old. I've been able to create the kind of greatest recess playground adventure ever, right? We all go out in the desert. Instead of BMX bikes, we actually have mega destroyers and Delta Mark IVs, and we basically have the biggest play day on the planet with grown-up toys. Obviously it's a childhood dream of mine, and that was the whole kind of, you know, background of the film, was being able to do that. You know, the strange part, you know, like initially when I started to utilize Barry in my film, like he was more like an Ace Hunter action figure, not Barry Bostwick, the actual human being, right? It's like, oh, okay, well, I've got a buggy, I've got a bike. Now I need my action figure of Ace Hunter so I can do this thing. And what obviously, you know, comes through in the film and really changes the outcome of the film was the realization of, you know, not the fantasy of what it was, but like actually knowing, you know, essentially meeting our heroes and them actually really delivering as human beings, right?
You've essentially not just got to make a film about your favorite film as a boy. You've got to become mates with the guy, with not just the hero, but the man behind the hero, to the point where he's worried about your renovations in your house.
Barry Bostwick is way, I almost put my hands up again. Barry is, yeah, Like, he's way cooler than Ace Ventura. So.
He's way
cooler. You're way cooler.
Oh, I am. Oh, yeah. No, I. Well, Ace Hunter was pretty cool, but the problem was that they didn't allow me to be really cool or really silly or, you know, I think Michael Douglas should have played the part. He would have brought a centeredness to it, you know, he would have
Romancing the Stone vibe.
Yeah, yeah. I don't. And what would Tom Selleck have brought to the part? He would have brought a certain charm, and he would have brought a smile, but he wouldn't have brought a sort of snarkiness to it that I think Douglas would have brought to it.
Yeah, but you have something like in your performance in the movie, like you have right, like you're so approachable as the hero, you know, like as an 11-year-old boy, right? Like I wasn't intimidated or scared by you, but at the same time, like I knew that if, you know, the crap went down, like you could handle it, right? You just really balance the accessibility. Like I think Selleck, I mean, he did a good job at Magnet PI, but like he was a little too, I think he was a little too dangerous for Megaforce, at least the Megaforce that was actually made and came out, right? Like, I mean, obviously you own the role, so it's impossible. I don't think Michael Douglas could have done it, for sure.
Barry, Kevin Kline would have been great in it.
Barry, there was a moment that you've talked about in some of your stories that you thought you had a day off during filming, so you told to you decided to go sit by the pool and partake of some of the devil's lettuce, and you were called away back into action while you were.
I don't remember what scene we were doing that day. I just hope it wasn't a scene where I had a lot of dialogue.
What have been right where the ball hides?
Do you remember what scene it was, Bob? Did I make this whole thing up?
It's possible.
Yeah, it is but possible. We made a whole script up.
You know, it's odd because I interviewed an Australian actor who worked on a Martin Campbell film, Martin Campbell of James Bond, Casino Royale. And it was weird that he had a similar circumstance. He thought he had a day to himself during. So him and his mate decided to get on some acid. And next thing you know, someone comes through the door and says, "Oh, mate, they need you on the set. Are you kidding? I'm tripping balls." And he's like, no, they need you. Don't worry, I'll look after you. So he said, "I was going up in a helicopter up to this scene in the mountains, filmed in New Zealand." He said, "Man, and the rocks were turning into dragons, all this sort of stuff." And yeah, I kind of imagine after Barry told that story that maybe the scene where the bike flies at the end, he lands in the bay, he looked extraordinarily happy to be on the back of a flying bike. I thought it might have been that scene.
Maybe that's when you came up with the flying motorcycle.
Did I really come up with that?
It tracks. I actually in cutting the other day, I was going through the location schedule, and then all the pages in the script that refer to the flying motorcycle in the original script, in the editorial original script, they're all different colors, and it said they were revised like November 1st, and the rest of the script doesn't have those. So like that would have been when you were there already and signed up. So I think it maps. I think we can build a case for it being your idea. I mean, obviously we do in the film, so it doesn't really matter if it's true after the film comes out. It's going to be
like life. It doesn't matter.
Anything. It's great. Anything you put down now will now be history. That's right.
But in the original script, did it say how I got into the back of that plane? Did I just go faster than the plane and just go up the ramp, or was just eliminated?
No, that was it. You just went. It was just a rolling ride into the back. Like in Fast and Furious 7, or was that 6?
So I came up with this outlandish, over the top thing where they added a couple of little flimsy wings to the motorcycle at the last minute. And then you push the button and it supposedly goes into what, Sonic mode or something. And then we build the contraption that they hooked me up to on the desert. So they get me. Did they build that at the last minute? That little rig?
Yeah. So for those of you who haven't seen the documentary yet, they basically put the motorcycle at the end of the scaffolding up the front of a Ford F-150 pickup truck. And the winch cable off the truck was hooked to a pulley on the bike. So when they hit the winch, the bike would raise up. And then they also had a C-130 fuselage on the back of a flatbed truck. And then a camera truck. And this entire package took off across the desert. So with the lead actor on this motorcycle at the end of this contraption, and they hit the winch and they lift him right off the ground, and I've got some photographs where he's like easily 15 feet off the ground doing 40 miles an hour in a leotard helmet.
That must have been the day I was stoned.
That's what I was thinking.
God, to allow myself, a Screen Actors Guild would never allow that to happen these days, would they?
No, not anymore.
Well, not with somebody like Michael Douglas or Tom Selleck.
No. Me, they would just kick under the bus.
Gentlemen, before we run out of time, I'd like to guide our listeners over. We're going to put a link in the description to the Indiegogo. There is still plenty of time for you to get over and, donate. Don't talk about it.
20 days as of today or something like that?
20 days as of right now. There's still plenty of time.
That's 75% funded already. It's amazing. We're unlocking a bunch of stretch goals next week with some extra swag and cool.
And
has anybody bought the Mega Destroyer yet?
Not yet, but it's going like wildfire. That video, for those of you who don't know, the top perk on our Indiegogo campaign is an actual screen used Mega Destroyer from the film Megaforce. It's pretty much the ultimate perk and ultimate prize. If you want a dune buggy with no motor and no transmission, put it in your backyard, put it in your living room. It's going to be amazing.
Sounds awesome.
Somebody's going to get it. It's good.
So, but they could always put it, what was it, a Volkswagen engine and something? I mean, it's easy to add, to put it back together again, right?
Yeah. I mean, I put back together two of them so far. So, and they were, worse shaped than that one. So,
yeah,
you just have to be a true fan. You've got to be dedicated.
That's awesome. Get over everyone right now. We'll put the link in the description. Get over it. Support a piece of cinematic history. It's Megaforce, making Megaforce my guests on Cinema. And the great, the one and only, the legend, the man himself, the man with the headband, Barry Botswick. Gentlemen, thank you for both being on the show and sharing a little bit of your friendship and all things marvelous about Megaforce.
Thanks, thanks for reaching out. I really appreciate it.
This is really
cool. He found us. You found us?
I found you.
Oh my God. Wow, geez.
I'm one of those couple of guys in Australia which Megaforce.
What a reach. Well, thank you so much. I couldn't be happier to have done this and to get back with, what's your name, Bob? Bob, yeah. But Bob, who's making this film. And thank you for having us and encouraging us. And we've loved this whole relationship that we've developed over the years with the Megaforce fans. And it has been really a wonderful time in my life.
Yes, that was the legendary Barry Botswick and Bob Lindenmeyer. The film is Making Megaforce. Get over to the Indiegogo campaign. There is still time, 15 days left, to join the might of Megaforce.
there's heaps of great incentives over there. I know I've got over there to order my copy of the film Blu-ray. There's all sorts of cool stuff. You can get headbands. You can even get one of the vehicles, I'm led to believe. So if you're really, really hardcore, there's no excuse if you're a lover of Megaforce not to get over and support making Megaforce, support independent cinema. The best documentaries I've seen about some of the movies I love have been made by people who love those movies. And so I hope you will continue to support them and independent cinema. Bob Lindenmeyer and Barry Botswick, what an honor. Ladies and gentlemen, get over to the Indiegogo campaign. It is in the description box right now, making Megaforce. Thank you for supporting independent films, and thank you for listening to Cinema Yugen. I'm Ken Hill, and thank you for tuning in on Spotify or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, and we will see you next time.